This show is brought to you by BigAndTallMart.com. BigAndTallMart.com is your number one source for all things big and tall. From licensed t-shirts to casual wear and everything in between, BigAndTallMart.com has you covered. Use promo code GEEK10 on checkout to save 10% on orders $50 or more. BigAndTallMart.com is a proud sponsor of ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. Games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. This week in geek. This week in geek.
Who runs Bartertown? This is This Week in Geek, and I am your host, Mike, the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla, Dodd, but I'm not alone as I travel across the wastelands. I am joined by...
David Master Blaster Dennis.
And Andrew, both my nicknames that I were going to use were just taken, Roebuck.
Yes, guys, we are back here on ThisWeekInGeeks.net's topic show for the month of March. Yes, I realize it's April, but I was actually really sick at the end of last week. I had no voice, and Dave had to go see a friend off to Antarctica or something. So we weren't able
close.
To... close, surprisingly.
New Zealand, yeah. So actually, she could. It wouldn't take her that long to get to Antarctica.
You know what, Dave?
All things considered.
You're the only person I know who has a woman who's willing to travel halfway across the world just to get away from you. I love you, buddy.
Yeah.
So yes, guys, we are apologizing for the wait, but we are going to be celebrating, as you can guess, the world of Mad Max for the upcoming Fury Road, which comes out in May, I think May 15th, if I'm not mistaken. So we're going to talk about the movies, the franchise themselves, like kind of talk about apocalyptic cinema, because that is kind of starting to make a comeback, especially with the whole zombie genre, though films like The Road Warrior, I can't think of too many that are like it, actually, surprisingly. But I can think of a bunch of books and comic books that follow along those lines. But anyway, what else is going on here? I guess we should go around the room. What's everybody been doing the last couple of weeks?
Just working. Nothing too exciting, just watching and buying movies.
And you're moving to Ottawa, aren't you?
Yes, I am indeed.
What's in Ottawa? Do tell.
I just have a bunch of friends in Ottawa, and I don't know. I've kind of started. I've been doing small town journalism lately, and I just kind of want to go to the big city, branch out, see if I can actually get some jobs now that I have some actual stories under my belt.
Well, we have friends in Ottawa. We have Ryan, the Uneven Flow Merkley, lives up there, so you can finally meet him.
That would be nice.
I think that'd be really cool to have you guys collaborate on stuff up there. So that's exciting. Dave, what about yourself? What have you been doing?
I just started a new job working for AppleCare, actually. Which is funny because the only Apple product I own is an iPod from 2009 that I'm just waiting for it to break at this point. But yeah, so I'm going to be doing phone support. Yay, exciting, I guess.
Oh,
but
call hey,
it's a, yeah, it's a way to save money for now.
It's
until
true.
I can possibly do something better.
That's cool.
I'm going to be moving out soon, so
you're moving
changes in my life.
You're moving a whole 25 feet, I understand.
Yeah, it's just the cottage next door to my house, but I get my own place with my
own space
to live in. Yeah,
it's going to be Dave's, no, I was going to say den. Drug den, meth den, opium den, depending. exciting times where ladies will, well, hopefully be found at some point. Myself, for the last little while, as you guys know, I've been still doing the whole rad thing. I just reviewed, I'm trying to think what was the last game I did. Dragon Ball Xenoverse. I'm still working through Battlefield Hardline. I just need to finish up the campaign for that. It's not a bad game. It's just kind of a... why was this released as a Battlefield standalone game is my main question. I also just received Xenoblade Chronicles today for the new Nintendo 3DS. I actually gave away my copy of this a couple of years ago, and kicking myself ever since. And I'm actually beginning a new writing project, surprisingly. Rather much inspired by my friend Adam Goldberg, who works, or is the showrunner for the Goldbergs, television show. I'm actually trying to write some television stuff, and since I have enough friends in weird places, who knows? I'm going to be doing that over the next couple months. I got kind of a few ideas for a drama, one sitcom, and one children's show, actually. So that's what I've been up to. But anyway, I'm going to send out a big thanks to our sponsors of offworlddesigns.com. You may have seen them at WonderCon most recently. They're going to be at Gen Con again this year. Pretty much any convention that happens in, like, the Midwest, they're likely there. I think they're also going to be at San Diego Comic-Con like they usually are, I'm pretty sure anyway. But also people such as GameAccess.ca, which hopefully you guys will be renting Mortal Kombat, which is going to be our topic show for this month, to celebrate Mortal Kombat 10, coming out next Tuesday, if I'm not mistaken. And, yeah. So anyway, guys, before we get any further down this highway of desolation in this fuel-injected suicide machine, here are just the facts.
When the gangs take over the highway, remember, he's on your side. His name is Max Rockatansky, and he's as mad as they come. The first Mad Max movie exploded into cinemas in 1979, and for over 35 years, he's been keeping the roads of Australia safe, with three movies and a fourth one on its way in May. Mad Max, the first film in the series, was conceived in the early 70s, when Australia was suffering from an oil crisis, and director, George Miller, was working as a paramedic. Witnessing gruesome deaths and injuries on a regular basis, this became the foundation of some of the most grisly deaths and harrowing stunt scenes ever seen in the film series. Together with producer and friend Brian Kennedy, Miller managed to scrape together the funds to finance his low-budget action film, setting in a dystopian future because he believed it would make the situation more believable for audiences. The first Mad Max hit theaters on April 12, 1979, and became a massive hit. With a budget of about $400,000, it went on to gross over $100 million worldwide, becoming the most profitable film for 20 years until the Blair Witch Project broke its record. It also helped propel young star Mel Gibson onto the map, making the then 23-year-old star an overnight celebrity. The film was released in a completely dubbed version in North America, however, since studio execs believed Western audiences couldn't understand the actor's thick Australian accents, a mistake that was later corrected in the film's various video releases. With the success of the first Mad Max, a sequel was inevitable, and 1981's Mad Max 2, titled The Road Warrior, in America, is darker, faster, and more intense than its predecessor. With a considerably larger budget, director George Miller was able to once again return to the vast, dystopic outback landscape of Australia in a way that he could never show it before, including one of the longest and greatest chase scenes ever filmed. The film's incredible tanker chase climax, where the gangs of Lord Humongous desperately attempt to capture an oil tanker driven by Max, a feral child, and his trusty sawed-off shotgun. With both Mad Max and Mel Gibson becoming household names thanks to the success of the first two films, it was time to complete the trilogy, and once again go even bigger and more expensive than ever before in 1985, with Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. The film co-starred Tina Turner in her first major Hollywood role as the evil anti-entity, and had a plot so unnecessarily convoluted I won't bother to explain it here. Unfortunately, Mad Max 3 suffered from an overbloated plot and a PG-13 rating, part of which is because of the film's production, rife with difficulties after producer Brian Kennedy died while location scouting in a helicopter crash. This led to George Miller hiring a second director to co-direct, alleviating some of the workload for the grieving director. Well, it's been 30 years, and after a decade of rumors and speculation, George Miller finally returned to the series to helm the long-awaited, much-anticipated fourth film, Mad Max Fury Road. The film stars Tom Hardy, replacing Mel Gibson in the title role, with Charlize Theron and Nicholas Hoult co-starring, and thankfully returns the series to its original R-rated roots. Plus, the trailer looks awesome. That just wraps it up for Just the Facts, but remember, if you're alone on that dark and dusty road, he's always out there. The man known simply as Max. I know him now, only in my memories.
Alrighty, thanks Andrew for that extremely informative Just the Facts. And I guess now we'll dive into the exciting topic of Mad Max.
You know, when we kind of got this idea for this particular topic show, this is a series of movies I've always had people around me talk about or say they really like, yet I've never seen. But it wasn't up until the last couple of days doing research for the show, I realized I've actually seen the ending to Mad Max 2 when I was a kid. And I've seen bits and pieces of Thunderdome over the years. In fact, there's actually one scene in it where they're in Thunderdome, basically the giant monkey bar death pit, where this host guy comes out and he starts talking like a game show host. And he says, "All right, boys and girls, dying time's here." And I remember from so many... heavy metal albums,
trailer and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was like, I know this sound clip, but why? And it was so weird just to hear some of this stuff. And then from hearing from the first Mad Max movie where Knight Rider is saying, "I'm a fuel injected suicide machine," I'm thinking, where have I heard that before? It's weird how much of this stuff has actually seeped into my pop culture lexicon. Because for the last couple of years, I've actually been saying, you know what, I just can't get beyond Thunderdome. And I never quite knew what the hell it meant. I just thought it sounded cool. So now that I've outed myself as a hipster doofus, I hope you will all enjoy that. It's one of those franchises I'm kind of glad I've discovered later in life. Because I don't think I would have liked these three movies as much as a kid. Because right now, we're basically... going to discuss how we discovered the franchise, and I feel really bad for saying this, but it took me like 4 days to get through the original Mad Max, and I tried like I said, 4 days, three times.
Even though it's like 93 minutes long,
it seems so long, and like there's just stretches of it where nothing happens, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, they're going to take my film nerd card if I say I hate this movie. And I'm like, ugh. Although Road Warrior was surprisingly good. I actually watched that movie like 3 or 4 times over the past couple days because it's just really well done. And I'm surprised.
Yeah, Road Warrior is honestly one of those movies I can throw on any time because it's so entertaining.
Well, I'm surprised how well it flows. I mean, it's over before you know it.
Oh, yeah.
One of the things that I noticed about it, too, is... because it was filmed in Australia, obviously they use a lot of Australian cast. There's a guy in the movie named Bruce Spence. He plays the helicopter pilot. That's the train man from The Matrix and The Matrix Revolutions.
That guy's in everything. Like, he was in... I think he was in Star Wars Episode 3. There's, like, a random alien that Obi-Wan talks to, and it's, like, Bruce Spence in makeup. And if you watch the extended version of... The Return of the King, he plays the Mouth of Sauron.
That's so weird.
So, yeah, Bruce Spence is in so much random crap where you're just like, hey,
it's Bruce Spence. Now, I feel bad how I recognized him, and I don't know whether this makes me an asshole or not, but I recognized him because of his teeth. He has a very, very recognizable mouth.
He has like those weird kind of jagged teeth and like that wide mouth. Well, that's why they cast him as the mouth of Sauron.
Yeah, I was about to say that's like the most noticeable part of that movie.
I was like, I don't want to call him a horse face, but that's the only description that really fits here. I'm sorry, Bruce Spence, if you happen to be listening.
He's probably heard worse.
Yeah,
he's probably gonna send in a response going, "Nay."
He's gonna throw a fucking snake on me and I'll die. Then watching Beyond Thunderdome, it turns out I actually saw this movie as a kid, but I didn't know what the hell it was. I remember the scene of Master getting lowered into the pig pit when he's in the underground.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck is this? All right, change of the channel. And I remember the last sequence in that movie where they're taking the train truck thing down the tracks, and that little kid comes out and says, "This is a stick up." And I just remember watching that scene for about all of 2 minutes, once again, as a child, go, "Man, you can't make this up." And then I think I went to go watch like Goof Troop or something. But yeah, so that's my experience with the franchise. Oh, and as a side note, I did find out there was an NES game based upon the Road Warrior. And evidently, it is one of the first examples where the programmers fuck with you. There's a password system in this game, I found out. And if you enter it, you can skip right to the last part and the last fight. But you are always going to be one piece of ammo short to kill the last boss.
That's amazing.
I'm thinking, wow, way to troll people. That's awesome. That's the earliest example I can find of a programmer fucking with you. Now, whether that's intentional or not, it has to be. That's amazing. So, who wants to go next on how they discovered the franchise?
I can go. Actually, I think the way that I first discovered the franchise was years ago. Dave actually did an episode of Movie Madness, or one of those things on...
We talked about Beyond Thunderdome, I think.
Yeah, and you guys were talking about Beyond Thunderdome, and I was like, you know what? I don't think I've actually seen those movies, so I might as well start at the beginning. And I remember, I think it was like first year of college, I watched the first Mad Max, and the first one is really, I enjoy it. It's interesting. And then I watched Road Warrior, and I was like, this is amazing. And I think it was sometime last year I finally got around to watching Beyond Thunderdome. And I love Beyond Thunderdome just because of how just ridiculous it is compared to every other film in the franchise. And I don't know, just some of the lines and some of the performances in it are just so, so enjoyable. But yeah, actually, you all have to thank Dave for me getting into the Mad Max franchise.
Aw, wow. I kind of indirectly got you both into it, I guess.
Yeah, more or less. Well, it's one of those franchises, it just seems to pop up in pop culture. Like, it's referenced, but I don't think a lot of people have actually seen it unless they're, like, unless they're either film students or people who really, really like movies, or they're, like, over 30, because these movies are old.
Yeah, for sure. And also, they are kind of, like, indie a little bit, because they're not from, they're, like, foreign films, because they're not made in America. So, like, the only way that most Americans would even, like, or Canadians would even get into it would be, like, what did that Mel Gibson character do before them Lethal Weapons?
Yeah. Well, like, even the original Mad Max, they had to dub over everyone's voice when they released it in America, because they were like, they're not going to understand them with their crazy Australian accents.
That just seems so ridiculous to me.
If you get the DVD, I think you can watch it with the original, like, voiceover, and it's terrible. Like, Mel Gibson sounds like a NPR announcer. It's like, come on, guys, we got to get out of here.
My God.
It's terrible.
That would be so
So
good.
Luckily, when they released the special edition on DVD, they finally put the original, like, voice audio in there, which is good.
Well, that's good.
I guess for me, like, how I discovered the franchise, my dad actually, from like a video store, I guess he rented a copy of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome when I was like 12 or something, which is good because it's the only one that's PG-13 and appropriate for that age. Although there is one really random F word in that movie that just comes out of nowhere. I think one of the kids says it. It's just like, what? But yeah, so I remember watching that, and I kind of had the same opinion then as I do now, that I love the first half of Beyond Thunderdome because it's so ridiculous, and they go to Bartertown, and it's awesome, and they have Master Blaster, and Tina Turner's in there. But as soon as he gets banished and they have the stupid kids in it, it's like a different movie, and it just is dumb from that point on.
It turns into the Goonies in a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of, like, the last 45 minutes of that movie. But that was the first one I watched. And then I watched them kind of in reverse order, because then I saw, like, years later, in the days when you could still do this, I taped off of TV the second movie.
Oh, nice.
And watched it that way, so I guess some of it was censored. It wasn't until later when I watched the DVD that I was like, oh, there's like a rape scene in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
That wasn't in there. Which is why it's like rated R Canadian, like the Canadian version of NC-17, basically. And then after that, they came out with like the special edition of the first Mad Max on DVD. And I think I got it for Christmas or something. And I was like, I can finally watch this. And yeah, I like the first Mad Max, but I think it's the one I've seen the least because I find it kind of, it's interesting because it was made on such a low budget, but it's kind of a boring movie.
Yeah, it's kind of just like a revenge film. And just set in a post-apocalyptic world. Like, it's like, yeah. It's way more of like kind of a straightforward movie than the rest of the films are, because the rest of the films can be crazy.
They were making it on such a small budget because they weren't sure if it was going to be a hit or not. And then the second one, after the first one was a hit, they made the second one with like way more money. And yeah, it shows. They didn't like, I think that was the problem with the third movie. They kind of had
too much power and too much money.
Yeah, the second one, they had just enough to do what they want, I think, without it kind of getting to their heads. And then the first one, they didn't have enough.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I can definitely see that.
So let's kind of start talking about the movies themselves. Obviously, we'll start in proper order. Mad Max. And like we just said, this is very much a straightforward revenge flick. It stars 23-year-old Mel Gibson as Max Rockatansky, leader of the Maine Police Force, or Maine Force Police or something like that. MFP, I think, is the acronym. Whatever.
The mother effing police.
It's right. Yeah. Motherfucking police force. So they're there patrolling the highways of Australia. There is some kind of an energy crisis. They're not super specific with it. They just say that the oil-bearing nations are saying fuck you to people. People are probably going to go to war over it. Things are not looking happy in the land down under. And basically street gangs have started becoming really, really, really bold. And so they're like raiding small towns. They're like hurting people. And the movie picks up with like this character called the Night Rider and this random woman stealing a police interceptor, which is like one of their super fast cars. And the whole time he's just yelling, I'm the Knight Rider, for some strange, bizarre reason. Hilarity ensues as he basically throws off the cops, and eventually Max gets called in because he's their top highwayman or something. And then a lot of nothing happens for a good long time. But we find out that the guy who eventually gets killed, the Knight Rider, was part of a gang run by a guy whose name I love, Toe Cutter. And they basically terrorize a town. They find out that Max has arrested one of their own. And they go to seek revenge against him. And because he gets off and the police captain, Captain Iffy or Fifi, is like, you know what? You can do whatever the hell you want. Just make sure the paperwork's clean. So obviously this is a police force you can trust. And they kill Max's wife and his kid, who has the stupidest name I've ever heard. It's like Sprog or Sprig or something like that. It's so fucking
dumb. It's not important.
It's not important. Either way,
he dies.
His name is Sprig Rokitansky. Like, think about that for a minute. Sprig. Who named that?
It sounds like somebody named their fucking D&D character that or something. It sounds so terrible.
Oh, Sprig Rokitansky is a very good dwarf warrior.
And look at his friend, Max Power. It's the most made-up name you could ever think of, or Jojo Joey Shabadoo or something.
And his girlfriend, Julia Pretty Woman.
It's so dumb. So after the gang runs down them on the highway, which I thought was actually a pretty cool sequence. Like, Max wants to leave the cop force. He's like, all right, fine. The captain says, take some time off. If you still feel that way, I'll let you go. Fine. So Max takes his family out on random vacation. They run across these guys because they went for fucking ice cream. See, it's so dumb when you explain the movie in detail.
You never go for ice cream in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. God.
You never go beyond Thunderdome, especially for ice cream. So they go to this farm, and then the gang attacks them, and the mother and the kid try and run away. They run them down on the highway. They cut away just as it hits them, and you just see their, like, shoes fly off. Which is not the first time I've ever seen that done in a movie. When someone gets hit by a car, they just show shoes on a highway. But yeah. Again, I guess you don't want to show dead
Mad
kid.
Max kind of invented that. I'm
kind of wondering.
You don't see it in anything before that, but yeah, I'm thinking like in Pet Sematary. I think when the kid dies, yeah, they do the same thing. It's always just the shoes. But imagine if they actually did show it and it was just like someone like exploding on impact and just shoes flying off. It would actually look pretty hilarious. Saying.
If they made this movie today, you'd probably see that.
Without making it look hilarious.
Without making it look hilarious.
Like a cartoon.
And then it shows Mad Max stealing this police interceptor, which is basically this like black super muscle car. And now this is something I find really, really, really interesting. For the last like 20 minutes of this movie, it's a revenge flick and it's fucking awesome.
I was gonna say this movie is really boring for like the first hour ish. There's like a few good parts here and there with like the motorcycle gang and stuff like that. But the last like half hour or so, as soon as his family dies, like I wish it sounds mean to say that, but I wish his family had died earlier so that that part of the movie, that third act, I guess, could be longer because it's the most entertaining portion of it.
Well, his partner, Jim Goose, gets his ass fried, basically.
Why is like, if Jim, your name is Goose, Jim, you're fucked. You're toast.
Well,
Jim Gun, Goose. Oh, don't God. Call yourself Goose.
Well, it's so dumb because his friend gets fried. He's like, you know what, man? I'm out of here. No, don't go avenge your friend. Leave and play with your dog and get ice cream. Where's the loyalty, man? But then after that, one of my favorite things is he handcuffs a guy to a car, throws him a hacksaw. Well, take you 10 minutes to saw through the handcuffs. 5 minutes if you hurry, if you saw through your ankle. Have fun. You can't leave me like this. Gives no fucks. Walks away. Guy blows up. And basically, one of the things I liked about this is he gets his arm run over at one point and he can't use it, and he gets shot in the kneecap. You may be wondering, why do I care about this? Because in subsequent movies, they never forget that. In the second movie, Road Warrior, he's walking with a brace.
He's got the metal brace on his leg.
And on his... Oh, sorry, Andrew, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, that's like one of the only things they do kind of carry over, because like they never really talk about the events of the other films.
Well, they reference that he's lost people and like how distraught he is, but not directly like him saying, yeah, my family died, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and it's weird because in any like American movies, like they would have like a recap scene, like last time on Mad Max. Well, my whole family died, and I say it.
Well, they kind of do that at the beginning of Road Warrior, but they gloss over it super quick.
Yeah, there's just quick footage of again the shoe flying off, and I think there's like a ball bouncing away after his kid dies while the guy's doing his opening monologue kind of thing.
One of the other things I did kind of notice as well is when Max gets his arm run over, if the paramedics were to come and get him, they would have to have cut off that part of his clothing. That piece of clothing is torn, is cut off there as well. Also, if you look in the movie, he has gloves, so he can grab his like shotgun or his pistol or whatever, right? In the movie, the first two fingers of his gloves are missing. You might be asking, well, what's the fucking point? So it's easier to cock the hammer and load the gun. It's a little detail that you don't realize. In addition to that, in Mad Max 2, where he gets hurt after he goes to fight Lord Humongous and it doesn't turn out so well for him, there's a point where you see his eye gets all fucked up. It looks like he basically just got punched after the huge like car crash. If you look in Beyond Thunderdome, his pupil's fully dilated to represent that injury.
Wow.
Oh, really? I never noticed that.
You only noticed George, it on HD ones.
George Miller was like a paramedic before he became a director, so he would know all those little details of how injuries affect people in the long run.
That's
so
awesome.
The fact that he actually directed all these movies, he was able to add all those little physical details of how Max keeps getting progressively more damaged throughout the movies. Also, a little fun fact, Mad Max, you may notice in the first movie, he has just kind of a normal haircut, because I guess barbers were still around, I don't know. But in the second movie, his hair is, like, he has, like, a white streak, and it's all, looks like it's all kind of chopped to shit. Yeah. That's because George Miller actually handed Mel Gibson a pair of scissors and said, here, cut your own hair, because there's no barbers in the post-apocalyptic future. And he did.
That's really
That's
cool.
Awesome.
He just hacked up his own hair. And then it's like a little bit longer in the third movie. He's kind of rocking the mullet. But
now, one of the things I find kind of cool about these movies is they don't take place within like months of a year. They take place years.
Yeah.
Like the first one takes place, I think it's like 50 years from now or something like that, they say. And then Mad Max 2 Road Warrior takes place, I think, 5 years after the events of the original, where the world has obviously gone to shit. Now, it's weird. Somehow, some people say World War III happened. Other people say the society just fell apart because of the oil crisis.
I think that's the biggest discrepancy between movie 2 and 3, because in the third one, they clearly reference that there was like a nuclear apocalypse. They show Sydney at the end of the movie, and it's all like blown up. And people are checking the water for radiation. But in the second movie, there's no indication of that. And in the opening, it just kind of says that, like you said, like everything just kind of fell apart naturally because of the oil crisis.
Well,
it might have been both.
Like, it could have been like something that happened even after Road Warrior. Like, you don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's kind of like they kind of look like they're kind of similar in like landscapes from Mad Max 2 and the Beyond Thunderdome. But like, I know the movies take place, like Beyond Thunderdome is 15 years after after the second film. So.
Now, I've read someplace that number's different.
Oh, is that like a lot or?
Supposedly it's only like six, like supposedly the events of all three movies take place within 6 years. That doesn't seem right to me. I think the 15 years probably a lot closer to reality. Like, I can't find a consistent timeline for this because I was trying to figure out where Mad Max Fury Road fits into all of this. And and it has to take place between 1 and 2.
I think they kept the continuity deliberately ambiguous. And with Fury Road, I've read conflicting things. Like, I've read stuff that, yeah, it takes place between the first and second movie. And I've read other things that it doesn't even follow the original timeline. It's just sort of a complete reboot, and it's going to start its own timeline sort of thing.
So, which I guess is fine, because I don't know if it really, at this point, if it needs to follow exactly.
I just like having a timeline and a continuity to follow for my movies. I guess, well, I'm funny like that, but...
Well, I do. I would like a, like, figure out a good continuity for the first three. But, like, the new one, I almost kind of just, in my headcanon, I just kind of consider it something new on its own.
It's almost like an Elseworlds story from DC. It happens in the same universe, just a different side of it, so to speak.
Yeah.
I feel like if Fury Road actually came out when they were first talking about it, because this movie they've been talking about since, like, the late 90s, I think.
It's been in development hell for something like 20
forever,
years.
Yeah. If it actually came out in the 90s with older, grittier, like Lethal Weapon 4 aged Mel Gibson, then they could have, you know, put it within that timeline. But I'm kind of glad it didn't, because I really like Tom Hardy and it actually looks really awesome. So
there's something about Mel Gibson, though, I'm really gonna miss, because I like the way he portrays Max in these movies, although he doesn't say a whole lot. When you add up his lines of dialogue, even with Thunderdome included, it's got to be well under 100 lines.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I kind of like that, though.
Yeah, he's like the silent hero.
I was going to say, I think in the second movie, Road Warrior, I think I read this on IMDb, he only says something like 16 lines of dialogue the entire movie.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you never notice it, because he's got such a presence on screen, he doesn't necessarily need to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a John Wayne type of thing. He just sort of like towers over you, and not much has to come out of his mouth. He just needs to punch people and shoot people.
Yeah, exactly. It's such a contrast from like everything else Mel Gibson has ever done, though. Like, when you think about it, like, Mel Gibson is always like a manic kind of like crazy presence in movies, and like this is an example of him being like way more low-key and kind of showcasing a little bit more of his acting prowess.
Yeah, if you compare this to, like, the Lethal Weapon movies especially.
Yeah.
Totally opposite characters. Like, if Mel Gibson met, Martin Riggs?
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon, he would, like, punch him in the face if the two characters met. So it does show his range as an actor.
Which is something that I do appreciate. Which is something that I kind of wish he was more known for this as opposed to Lethal Weapon, if that makes any kind of sense. Because I really like him in these. Like,
I think the Mad Max movies kind of put him on the map, but then Lethal Weapon kind of put him into, like,
superstardom.
Yeah, it's kind of like what happened with Jennifer Lawrence. Like, she did, like, Winter's Bone, and some people kind of saw it. It was nominated, or she was nominated for an Oscar, so it kind of put her on the map. But then when she did The Hunger Games, like, everyone knows who she is now.
Yeah, because
that's very true.
Yeah, she did so Hunger Games kind of and deal. X-Men sort of thing.
Also, Winter's Bone definitely sounds like a porno, but that's a whole nother story.
So, Road Warrior is, I've read this across a few different places, considered to be one of the best movies of all time. Definitely one of the best car chases of all time. I put this right up there.
I agree with that.
With the Matrix Reloaded car scene and the Italian Jobs car chase. Like, this, it was really friggin' intense. And it's weird because you consider these vehicles are essentially dune buggies and husks of car. These are not your Fast and the Furious stunts. They're more, I hate using the
word
gritty.
But there's no CGI. Like, they did all actual stunts for this. It's amazing.
That's crazy.
There is one stunt. I love this. It's a motorcycle guy flies off his motorbike and he goes flying through the air. That was a take that got fucked up. Just as he hits the ground, his knee bends at an angle you can't do.
Ooh.
And they left it in because it looked so good.
Yeah, I think that actor actually broke his leg when he did that.
Yep. Like,
a lot of these actors actually, or stunt people, actually got really hurt. And they left the takes in because they looked awesome.
That's awesome.
Which, it's one of those things where if you get hurt in a movie like this, I'd kind of be okay with it. Because that's
as long as you don't die or, like, you know, can't walk ever again or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as long as it's nothing life-altering, you know, you're going to live on in cinema history in some capacity. So what other parts about the
hope.
Or they hope. One thing that I found out, once again, while kind of doing the kind of research of this, is they wanted to tie this movie more closely to the original Mad Max. The character of Lord Humongous, the guy in the Jason mask, that was supposed to be Jim Goose. And you could actually you could see references to it in the movie. They're subtle, though.
I had a theory that he was actually the guy that I can't remember if it's Knight. Oh no, it's like something Johnny the Boy or something from the first movie that he ties to the thing at the end of the movie and hands him the
hacksaw.
The hacksaw. Like I thought it was him, and he just barely escaped. Like he tried to hack through the chains and barely escaped in time, but still caught on fire, and then, you know, hit the gym for 5 years, started doing roids and got super buffed up and became Lord Humongous. That was like my weird fan theory for many years. But then I actually read something on the internet that other people had that theory, and George Miller completely shot it down, that he's a totally different guy. And I was like, ah.
Now, part of the things that point this towards this being Jim Goose, but it's not, is he uses a lot of police vehicles in his fleet. Okay? Number one. Number two, the weapon he uses is an MFP revolver that's been modified with that huge scope on it. And number three, the main reason he's wearing the hockey mask is because he's horribly fucking burned. And you can actually see that in certain scenes.
Yeah.
So that would have been really cool, but I think they cut it out because I didn't want American audiences to become confused.
I think a lot of them hadn't seen the first Mad Max, which is why when it was released in America, they didn't keep the Mad Max 2 title. They called it the Road Warrior, so people wouldn't be like, Mad Max 2? I didn't even see the first one.
What's this Mad Max malarkey?
Although, it's one of those movies, despite being part of a trilogy, can completely stand on its own. You don't need to see the other ones.
Oh, for sure.
If anything, the first Mad Max feels less like the first one and more like a prequel to Mad Max 2. It's almost like you can watch the second one first, and then if you're interested, here's the origin story kind of thing.
I think that's how you told me to actually do this. Was actually watch...
Probably.
Yeah, watch 2, then 1, then 3. And I think that's why I had such a time... I think because I watched the first one first, that's why I was so disinterested. But once I got to Road Warrior, I'm like, all right, this is pretty fucking cool. Let's keep going here. There's so much to like about the Road Warrior. I really can't think of anything that sucks about it. I mean, other than the fact that nobody has a character name, really, other than this is Warrior Woman and this is the General. Lord Humongous.
I kind of like that about it, though. He just gives everyone quirky nicknames. The Feral Kid and stuff like that.
Who's fucking awesome and is Death Boomerang.
Yeah. This movie, the final chase scene in this movie is my all-time favorite car chase. I think I could watch that over and over again. And I think at the time it was actually the longest car chase of any movie. It's like 14 minutes long or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's such an awesome climax. There's so much going on at once, but it never feels like a lot of action scenes now I find are so chaotic and the camera's shaking around so much that I'm just like, I'm not into it. Like I feel disconnected from it because it's too much crazy shakiness. Whereas this, there's some shaky like handheld cam, but there's just enough of it to keep you gripped. Like even the way it was shot is just perfect.
I agree. That is like the highlight of the entire series, probably.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I also like about the Road Warrior is he doesn't have to rely on guns. Like, there's a lot of melee combat.
When he does shoot someone, it's awesome.
Yeah, because you're like...
There's one part where someone's on his truck and he's just like, nope.
Or...
its parts.
Or, like, he shoots the one cop through the glass and the car wipes out and explodes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But then there's, I think there's a part, too, where he tries to shoot someone and the thing, the shell just, like, fizzles out.
Yeah, it's, like, a dud, and he's like, ah, fuck.
So... You can't really rely too much on those things in the future, which is realistic. It's a lot better than the Book of Eli, where he has an iPod that's still working in the post-apocalyptic future. How does that work?
It's nuclear-powered, man.
Things will break in the future, especially iPods. They last for, like, 5 years.
It's a seeing iPod. It's magic.
But yeah, ultimately the Road Warrior is amazing, and then you find out the narrator is actually the Feral Kid, which is really cool. He's like, and I grew up to lead one of the great tribes of the North. I never knew what happened to him. He lives now only as a memory. There's something about that particular storytelling approach I really, really like. Like,
sure. Yeah, the ending of that movie really kind of sticks with you, I think, where he's just talking about Max and there's that image of him just like standing on a hill while they're driving away. Like, there's something really bittersweet about that. And I feel like even if they didn't make a third movie, if they just ended everything there, just very ambiguous, I would have been okay with that.
It kind of reminds me of the end of Terminator 2. Where it's perfect just the way it is. It didn't need a follow-up.
But if we didn't have a follow-up, we wouldn't have had Master Blaster.
That's true.
Anti-entity.
So let's talk about Beyond Thunderdome, because we have to get past it. That's the joke that's going to go through. Whoever does the write-up, please include that multiple fucking times. So Beyond Thunderdome takes place supposedly like 15 years after this. Mad Max's interceptor was destroyed in the last movie. He's using this modified truck being towed by camels.
Which is kind of a cool idea, actually.
It makes sense because gas is so hard to come by. And he gets buzzed by the gyro captain. Again, he's alive.
But he's not the gyro captain, though.
Really? It's I thought it was the same character.
His name in this movie is Jedediah the Pilot or something, and it actually is a different character. It makes no sense. Like, they got the same guy.
Do the same thing.
Do the same thing and basically play the same character, but he's a different character. Again, little discrepancies between 2 and 3 that's like, what? Yeah, that's possible that it's enough time that... But then Max would be a lot older. He should look like he's, like, 70 at this point.
He's unageless.
Maybe the nuclear radiation slows down aging or something.
Yeah. It altered his cells.
So eventually he tracks down the guy who steals his camels to this place called Bartertown, which is run by Tina Turner. I'm just going to explain it like that. She's not Auntie, she's Tina Turner. So Tina Turner basically hires Max to assassinate this duo of characters named Master Blaster. Blaster is this big goon of a guy who wears like this juggernaut helmet. And Master is this little midget dude who rides on him. And basically he's the brains, or as Blaster's the muscle. The main reason Tina Turner wants him dead is because he runs a refinery underneath Bartertown, which manufactures pig shit into methane, which can be used for fuel for vehicles. Something like how certain vehicles run on natural gas. And obviously having control of this would change the power structure in Bartertown, because I guess Master's the only one who knows how to do this or is scientific enough to make this thing happen. So, with Blaster out of the way, Master has no physical power anymore. He's basically, you do what we want or we'll feed you to the fucking pigs, which they almost do at one point in this. And so, eventually, Max goes down, fights Blaster, and it turns out he's developmentally challenged. He's retarded. And when you enter Thunderdome, two men enter, one man leaves. That's the rule. That's the law.
The law.
And then it goes into, if you break the deal, you face the wheel, because Max is like, I'm not going to kill a retarded guy. Are you insane? And he's like, I've done what you've wanted, more or less. I've beat him. What more do you want? And Auntie, or Tina Turner, decides, all right, you face the wheel, you broke a deal. And he gets banished to the gulag, which translates to wear a Mickey Mouse head in the desert, hope you die, I guess. And then it turns into the fucking Goonies. Okay.
Yeah. So then he runs into the kids, and the movie basically falls apart at that point. But everything up to that is
really
awesome.
Good. I mean, there's some fun parts when he meets up with the kids, but it's such a tonal shift. It's like two different people picked up this movie, and realistically, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Because George Miller's friend, Byron Kennedy, or Kennedy Byron, I can't remember which one.
Brian Kennedy
died during a location scout for this movie. So he was like, man, I don't know whether I can do this. So the studio kind of made a deal with him. All right, fine. You direct the action sequences. We'll do everything else. And all right, fine, whatever. And it fucking shows. Now, it turns out, supposedly, this wasn't supposed to be a Mad Max movie. They wanted to have this Lord of the Flies-esque thing where these kids are found by an adult and you see how their society evolves. And then someone had suggested, hey, why don't we put Max in there? And it's an interesting idea, but the kids seem so, like I said, they're the post-apocalyptic Goonies where they're, like, so quirky and weird. It doesn't work. And then they go back to Bartertown with Pig Fucker, or what's the guy's
name?
Oh,
sorry. Go ahead.
Pig Killer.
I think.
Yeah, Pig Killer. Helps them escape. And even that fight sequence seems like something out of fucking Home Alone. It's so weird because, like,
yeah,
he hits him with the, like, pig feed tray and he's like, hello. And then he runs away and then he pulls a fucking Han Solo where Max chases after the one goon. Ah! There's a brief pause. Ah! He starts running back the other way, and there's like 20 people chasing him. Which, that's funny for a gag, and I think that's why I like Beyond Thunderdome, because it's so weird, it just randomly shifts tones. And then you get one of the coolest chases in the series on top of that train, the train truck thing where...
Oh, and then there's that guy that never dies. He's got like a shrunken head as like a hat,
mm-hmm.
and there's like three scenes where you think he dies, and he never. It takes him till like the end of the movie. He's like the last person to die, and then he dies giving the middle finger. I forgot
That's awesome.
About that until just now. But I feel like Beyond Thunderdome, if they had picked one thing, like, I actually would have been okay if the whole movie was about the kids and Max like finds them and helps them escape from something, I don't know. Or if the whole movie just took place in Bartertown.
Yeah.
Or even if there were two separate movies. But the fact that it's like this weird hodgepodge, yeah, like, I don't know. That's why I've never... Again, there are things I love about this movie. I love Master Blaster. Like, that's probably my favorite character of any Mad Max movie. I just think the idea of two people kind of coexisting as like a symbiotic symbiote, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah, it's
kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a very iconic look, because I the Master Blaster, like their fighting style, I don't think I've ever seen it like something like that before Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. And I've seen the concept of like the two, like the little fighter and the big fighter, like fighting as one. Like, for example, in the newest Mortal Kombat game, there's essentially a character combo that is Master Blaster.
Oh, yeah, like, you're right. I can't think of the character's name, but yeah, I know exactly what you mean, though.
He's like a huge guy, and then there's like a little dude on top, and it's just like, oh, this is the
Master
Blaster.
That's clearly what they based it on, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually call him Master Blaster.
That would be amazing if it was actually Master Blaster.
Well, there are DLC characters, so if you're listening, Ed Boon...
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's not a bad movie, and I like how, once again, how this one ends. Eventually, the pilot, who is the trade man.
Let's call him the brother or the twin. That makes more sense.
He's unrelated
the identical
cousin.
Twin.
Long
lost twin.
So eventually they fly this fucked up plane to the ruins of Sydney, and Max stays behind to make sure they get away, and Tina Turner just lets him live. He's like, you know what? You've earned my respect. Good job, soldier. Okay, that was completely unexpected, but all right. So she fucks off, and then he just wanders into the sunset, so to speak, and then every night in the ruins of Sydney, the kids, who are starting to rebuild their own civilization, tell the story of Max every night, so they never forget where they came from.
Just wait for until the reformed society with the Church of Mad Max.
I would follow the gospel of Rockatansky, wouldn't you?
With I definitely would. And, you know, his faithful deities, you know, like
Goose. Dog.
Goose and dog. There'll be, like, a culture who solely worships the dog and the devil.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the... When Max's dog dies in the second movie, that's, like, the saddest... That's sadder than his family dying in the first one, I think.
Because you hear the dog yelp. Because
the dog is better than people.
Hey, the dog kicked the shit out of the train man, so... Let's not forget that.
That was an awesome dog.
That was an awesome dog.
I don't know if they're going to have a dog in the fourth one, but
I guess
think they can top.
I guess we're just going to have to wait to find out where this takes place. Once again, if they even bother to follow continuity with it.
Yeah.
So for our final bit of discussion here, we're going to talk about the apocalyptic cinema, because this, I can't think of many other movies that look like this. Now, there have been other apocalyptic things, and you could very much easily cite the zombie genre of films as apocalyptic scenarios. You think of shit like, say, 28 Days Later or Dawn of the Dead, where you see society has broken down, and there are these gangs out there doing what they can to survive. But with Mad Max, it's more rooted in... We don't know how to manage our resources. Oh, shit, what are we going to do? And society breaks down because things are not as easy as they used to be. Like, literally, it's not as simple as driving down to the Esso station, getting a tank of gas, and leaving. Now you will have to kill for it. Vehicles are going to have to be scavenged, repaired, and passed over again. So having a car that has 20 different parts from it is not unusual. Guns... Ammo isn't going to manufacture itself, so unless you're a gunsmith or know what you're doing, every shot counts. And stuff like clubs, swords, and axes are going to be a lot more common. Even then, those blades are going to get dull, and unless you know how to fix them, you're kind of fucked.
Although, somehow in Mad Max 3, there's a scene where they, like, make him give up all his weapons, and it's just like... It's basically guns. Played for laughs that he has, like, yeah, he's got, like, a dozen guns on him that he's somehow scavenged over the years.
Oh, yeah. And this has, like, a handful of shotgun shells. Like, here you go. Bam! They're like,
yeah,
damn.
The only other movie that I can even think that, like, the atmosphere and, like, the, like, scenery kind of resembles it is there's this movie from 1975 called A Boy and His Dog, which is, like, a post-apocalyptic movie where it's, like, a kid who just, like, has, like, this dog that he talks to telepathically, and the dog is just, like, this really weird dog who makes, like, a bunch of, like, sexual comments. It's a very weird movie. But the...
the
but,
only
like,
ones...
The desert scenario kind of resembles it.
The only things I can sort of think of are, like, The Road is a more recent one, and Waterworld.
Yeah, Waterworld's actually a really good comparison.
Yeah, I think Waterworld's probably the best comparison, because I feel like they just were like, what if Mad Max has water all over?
Well, that's...
And we throw $300 gajillion dollars at it. That could never bomb.
And Kevin Costner. And he drinks his own pee.
Because why not? But yeah, it's funny how you... I thought there'd be a lot more apocalyptic movies like Mad Max out there, and there really aren't. I mean, I can think of more comic books, anime, and stuff like that out there. I mean, you could even argue that the television show Revolution, where there's no power and people are having to scavenge and use horse-drawn vehicles and all that other shit as a potential TV show comparison. Mm-hmm. But I can't think of much other media that does it. Yet for some reason, I was always under this impression for years that there was a lot more like this.
Yeah, it's true.
I think what happened was after Waterworld came out and became this big bomb, then it became like an unbankable thing. Like up to the like late 80s, early 90s, it was like, yeah, we might be able to make money off of post-apocalyptic stuff. Like people are interested in that. But then after that, they were like, no way, we're not touching this anymore. And studios became kind of freaked out of the concept, and you didn't see anything like that after that.
Which is really unfortunate, because I think there's a lot of cool storytelling potential here, but I could see how people could potentially get sick of it, because if you compare this to, say, The Walking Dead, people call that show really depressing, and arguably it is. I mean, and the show is not even so much about zombies anymore. It's about the terrible things that people do. When you think about what people would have to do in the Mad Max world to survive, the fact that they're eating dog food, they're killing each other, hey, I'll kill this guy if you can give me 5 gallons of gas. I mean, really think about that.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
That's the thing that's always fascinated me with this, and I love zombie movies too for a similar reason, that it's basically about what happens when our society stops being about entertaining ourselves and starts being about pure survival.
Yeah, it's like, you know what? What are you willing to do? And everyone can talk a tough game saying, oh, well, I do this, well, I do that. Mm. Well, let's talk about that for a minute, so to speak. Because you see what happens to Max, and he was a good cop. He was a good father, and by all accounts, a relatively decent husband. But when everything gets taken away from him, and he's literally just left on his own to survive, you become a different person, and the outside changes you. And I think even a character says to Max, I think in Road Warrior, who's like, have you been out there so long that you're like them now?
And yeah, that kind of, or they say something like, you're like, he became a shell of a man.
Yeah.
It's kind of a line that kind of stuck with me, that he was just like a hollowed out version of what he once was. But you discover by the end of the movie, and also in the third movie to a lesser extent, that the goodness that's in you is still in you despite the bad things you might have to do to survive.
And I think that's what I kind of like about these movies, is despite all the terrible situations and Max being a hard ass for the first little bit, he always does the right thing. And he never asks for much in return, just what he needs to survive. I mean, when he goes back to get his stolen stuff, he's not there to kick the shit out of the guy. No, he just wants his stuff back. And in the second one, he sees these people are outgunned. They can help him, so there's a mutual benefit there. But after he loses the interceptor and all the other shit and bad stuff happens to him, he's like, you know what? You people are going to need my help. And he does the right thing. And ultimately, that car chase is really cool. And the truck is filled with fucking sand.
Whoa.
That blew my mind. I'm like, oh my God. That was so cool.
Although all things considered, couldn't they just have left the truck completely empty? Anyways.
They could notice, like, the way it
physics
drives,
exactly,
like,
physics.
I guess that final scene too, where he opens it up and the sand falls out, is so iconic. That if he just opened it up and nothing came out, it would be like, oh, that doesn't look as cool.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like in a world where like gasoline was that important, you'd like start like noticing like, oh, this is how something drives that has like a lot of like gasoline or liquid in it, kind of thing.
Yeah, true. So, plus the truck itself would be a lot more stable against attacks if it did have something weighing it down.
That's actually probably the best explanation.
So other things that have happened through Mad Max, there's a lot of merchandise for it. There's like posters. Surprisingly, there's action figures. There's actually quite.
Yeah, I know. My comic shop that I used to work at had a few Road Warrior action figures in it, but it was like no one good. It was just like that guy who announces Lord Humongous and then gets his hand chopped off. They had an action figure of that guy. I was like, no wonder. These are like the leftovers.
See,
after all the Max action figures sold out.
See, I wouldn't mind getting a Lord Humongous or maybe a Master Blaster because that's just so weird. There's actually quite the aftermarket for cars from Mad Max. To get Max's Interceptor, I know there's like an entire website dedicated to it because the cars became so insanely popular after the movie, people started to want to buy them.
I think I have a picture of myself because I went to a car show, like this was years, I was probably in high school, like 16, 17, and the guy had actually made a V8 Interceptor like to look exactly like the one from Mad Max. So there's like a picture of me standing next to it.
You should find
that
picture.
Awesome.
Yeah, I need to find out where this went because I don't even think it was digital. I think this was actually like you went to Walmart and got it developed.
Oh,
picture.
Wow.
That's like in a box somewhere.
Find that before next month's topic shows. I think that'd be really cool to like just talk about for like just a minute. There's also been a number of video games. There was one for the NES, like I said, where basically you have to gather supplies, fight a boss at the end of each level. It's supposed to be pretty stupid. I've never played it.
Aren't they coming out with a new Mad Max game?
Yes.
Like an open world game, which is something I've wanted for years, and finally it's happening.
Yeah.
Although basically you could argue that Fallout is already that game, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing I never even thought about, actually.
Yeah, that's good. The 2015 game actually looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it was supposed to come out this month. Obviously, it got delayed. I think it comes out in September. But it looks pretty cool. You can go out into the wasteland, find more parts and weapons for your car, which you actually, they steal the Interceptor, but you have to build a new vehicle or something. And you're paired with a mechanic named Chum Bucket.
Awesome.
Which is kind of funny. Although it isn't Tom Hardy voicing Max, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that does kind of stink.
It's another guy. But still, it does look pretty cool. It comes, I think it's from Warner Brothers Interactive, so hopefully I'll get a chance to review it later on this year, because I should be doing, because there's a couple of big WB games coming out, Mortal Kombat next week, then Batman Arkham Knight in June, so I'll have reviews of those later on.
Nice.
So, yeah. Hey.
Another nice cool thing, Marvel Comics, one of their Deadpool series, they recently had like a cover that like completely re-puts Deadpool in like the Mad Max like movie poster.
Which one?
I kind of linked to it. It's kind of like a mix of like a few of the posters, but like he's doing the iconic stance that he has like from Road Warrior,
which is the poster which I think is the one everybody knows, and I always see in the random background of like movies or like TV shows. So I guess the rights that use that poster are really, really cheap. But anyway, so I guess that's pretty much going to do it for this month's topic show. Final thoughts on the Road Warrior franchise?
Amazing. I love it. I cannot wait for Fury Road.
David? Is he dead?
I killed him. Lord Humongous, it was I.
It is. Turns out Dave dropped from the call, but that's unfortunate. I think Dave would probably say we should probably check out the series as well. I like it, although I would recommend you start with Road Warrior, then Thunderdome, then watch the first one. Think of it as kind of like Star Wars. You can watch them in reverse order, so to speak. So like I said, we'll be back later on this month to talk Mortal Kombat. Should be a good time. So until next time, we have been
Andrew Randrew Roebuck.
I've been David Double D Dennis. And I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, just can't get beyond Thunderdome.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my god, there's snot on my face! And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
You gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth.
Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico. Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.